Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by the Alliance Theater's Two Plays by Pearl Clay, on stage now through April 15th at the Southwest Arts Center.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to Project Runway all-star Edmund Newton. The Atlanta-based fashion designer is here to chat about appearing on Season 6, and he also shares some exclusive information about the Edmund Newton brand and more. American Idol contestants Julian and Milo Sposato stop by Upfront to chat about appearing on the new season and share some new music from their forthcoming album. And closing out the show is my conversation with iconic author and playwright Pearl Clegg. She's here to chat about her 2 one-act plays at the Southwest Arts Center. Ms. Clegg also opens up about her plans for 2019 and more. I'll also be playing music from the Sposato Brothers along with Lee Morgan and Robert Glasper featuring Erykah Badu. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
CL Casting is looking for physically intimidating African-American men. The actors must be between 5'7 to 5'9 and 180 to 190 pounds. The actors must be able to fit a 40 regular jacket along with a medium-sized shirt. The actor's pants size must be 33 by 32 and a shoe size of 10 and a half. Actors must also be able to work Wednesday, April 4th, Thursday, April 5th, Monday, April 9th, and Tuesday, April 10th. If this is you, please submit your name, age, phone number, height, weight, along with 3 clear headshots to submissions at catretcasting.com with muscles in the subject line of the email. Catret Casting is looking for Caucasian, Hispanic, and African American males and females to portray research scientists working for the U.S. government on a top secret mission. The actors must be between the ages of 20 to 60 and must be able to work on Thursday, April 12th. If this is you, please submit 3 clear, well-lit, recent photos of yourself along with name, age, height, weight, and phone number to submissions at catretcasting.com with mutate in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, check out the new trailer for HBO's new docuseries, Being Serena, at WCLK. It premieres on May 2nd and features 5 spellbinding episodes. Being Serena provides viewers unprecedented access to Williams during her pregnancy, new motherhood, and marriage while documenting her journey back on the tennis court. The intimate 5-person show delves into her landmark career, family life, and expanding role as a businesswoman and investor in the worlds of tech, fashion, fitness, and philanthropy. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the 82nd Annual Atlanta Dogwood Festival, April the 13th through the 15th. This year's festival includes artist booths, live entertainment, a kids' village, and 5K run. The Backyard Bites and Brews is also back. Information and a full schedule of events is available at dogwood.org.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Dream of the land my soul is from. I hear a head stroke on the drum. Shades of delight, cocoa.
My first guest comes from Lifetime's uberly popular fashion competition series, Project Runway All-Stars. I'm talking about none other than Atlanta designer Edmund Newton. The style maven stopped by Upfront this week to discuss appearing on Season 6 and also opens up about moving forward with his career. He also shares some exclusive news about his brand that you won't hear anywhere else.
Well, hello, Edmund Newton, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So glad to have you here. You were actually supposed to be here at the beginning of the year, and I got sick. I got the flu, and we had to reschedule. And yeah, you're a busy guy.
Man, I stay doing
I've
something.
I've been leaving messages. I'm like, Edmund, come on. Hey, remember me? We were supposed to do the show, the interview. And you finally, and this was perfect timing because this was just, I mean, everything is just lining up. This is great timing. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. We're talking to
Edmund Newton, one of the three Atlanta stars, I should say, of season 6 of Project Runway All-Stars. You guys were a part of history. This is the first time, I think, in the series history that we had ever seen 5 African-American male designers as like the top 5 kind of finalists. That's never happened on that show before. So what was that like?
Yes, never has that ever happened. Just being a part of that moment and just being able to celebrate it and where we are today. Just let's start with that, first of all.
Yeah.
And just being one of the top 5 and knowing and watching the show basically from its very beginning. You know, there was once upon a time where you'd just be glad to see one,
person
of color on the show.
Right.
And now it's gotten to the point to where literally it's at a point where it's the top 5 and then they're male. And I really showcase and shows just a lot of different perspectives and just the talent in general that's out here. And it's just great to be a part of that moment. Definitely. Yeah.
I reposted, I think there was a collage, a photo of all you guys together. And it was just like, to see that picture, it was like, wow, this has never happened before. I don't think on any television competition or anything like that, that your top 5 finalists were all male, all African-American. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. One
of your fellow Atlantans and brother in fashion, Anthony Williams, said that Project Runway is where you find out who you are as a designer, and All-Stars is where you show who you are as a designer. Would you agree with that?
You know, that was a great way to put it. And yes, I do agree with him. And I do remember that exact moment when we were on the show and Alyssa Milano asked us about that. And he gave that answer. And I was like, all for it. But I also have my perspective of it now. And even with leaving the show, you know, not to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it. Hopefully by now you've seen it. I mean, we're a couple weeks into it or whatever. But my take on Project Runway All-Stars is I look at it like this. Even with my leaving, like I told you, I've been up since 3 this morning anticipating this interview, but then also just working on stuff. And I sent out a something on social media on my Instagram, and it's basically explaining to my fans, like, I gave them a moment in addition to myself where I didn't post anything since last Thursday of my leaving the show. A lot of people are upset, a lot of people are mad, a lot of people are hurt, a lot of people are just like waiting on what's next, what are you doing next. So I took that moment to kind of get my mind together, but allow them to also have their moment of how they feel and not tell them how to feel. So I addressed it this morning, and I said that for me, when I left the show, it felt as if it was a graduation. I felt that, you know, Project Runway for me was high school and Project Runway All-Stars was college, you know, and when I left the school, left the stage or was voted off, that was my moment of graduation. Now it's time for me to actually pick up and fly and soar like a bird and do things my way. So all in all, I felt that I've completed both of those elements, and now I'm just really, really excited about what the future holds for me as a fashion designer.
I kind of did some digging in your history. You've been a model.
Yes.
You're a professional hairstylist.
Yes.
You also love photography.
Yes.
At what point did you say, you know what, I don't want to be the subject, or I don't want to be in front of the camera. I want to be sort of the guy that's kind of behind the scenes that's sort of creating the magic and designing for others. When did that kind of go off in your head that, you know what, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Wow, I love that question. I love interesting questions, and I have not been asked that one. How much time do you have? But to be honest with you, I've always had like this element of creativity and this artistic side. And in order to move forward in what I want to do and expand creatively, I've always had to push myself and challenge myself in elements that I wasn't that I was not comfortable in. So like you say, as far as the arts and barbering and stuff, if you think about that, because I'm a licensed professional barber stylist and I grew up in a salon. So even with that, it's like I'm creating a feeling and a look for someone else. But therefore, with the modeling, I had to step out in front of the camera where I used to do photography and take on that role. I think that definitely set me up for success in the sense of I used to be totally camera shy and all that stuff in front of the camera. But I realized that, you know what, this is something that you have to do, get past this point and able to move forward. So to answer your question with that, I would say, really, 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 really. it's hard to find that defining moment of when it actually, you know, changed and converted over to me just, you know, going that route. But I've always been into the arts.
Yeah. Now, you were close to the late Project Runway season 3 finalist, and I think he was the first Atlantan to appear on the show, Michael Knight.
Yes.
What was a lesson that you learned working with him? Because I think you guys actually auditioned for Project Runway together the first time, right? And he, is that the story? He sort of got it, but you didn't get it, right?
Well,
something,
you know,
like that?
I guess it's something I don't know if we've ever really discussed how that transpired, but I actually started auditioning for the show before I even knew what it even, you know, visually would appear to be.
Right.
You know, I was made aware by another friend of mine that they were casting for a reality show, and this was an opportunity of a lifetime. You win money, cash prizes, or whatever. And with that, prior to, I actually had met Michael Knight here in Atlanta, actually on the campus of Morehouse. He was doing the, when you would do the homecoming fashion show.
Got it.
Didn't know him that well to that degree or whatever, but make a long story short, yes, he was the first Atlantan on the show. And immediately following him coming off of the show, I ran into him at an event that he was speaking at a college, introduced myself, we exchanged information, and from there, you know, we would communicate, you know, on a regular, you know, every now and then or whatever. And just seeing him make it onto the show definitely gave me the extra boost of encouragement and inspiration that I could do it also.
Now, what's next? Because, you know, part of the challenge of getting you on the show, you're in the midst of preparing for wedding season. It's prom season.
Yes.
What's next for Edmund Newton?
I'm actually working on completing my book. It's a book of memoirs. And what it is, it's the story of me. I'm starting kind of in the center. You know, it's not an autobiography to that degree, but what it is my journey to getting to Project Runway. And throughout the process of actually applying, and, you know, whether it's learning more of the phases, the rejection or whatever, or growing and developing who I am as a designer, life still took its course. You know, so it's also the story of being determined, being focused, losing loved ones, gaining loved ones, going through different situations and trials and tribulations in life, staying strong in faith, going through it to get to it. There's so much. So I don't want anyone to think that, oh, it's just a book about fashion. No, it's a book. It really, if asked where it should be placed, place it in the center of the bookstore beside the Bible. I mean, that's the closest reference I can say, because it's a true story. It's spiritual. It's
what's
for your
title?
Mental. Right now, the name is tentative, and it's called My Road to the Runway. That may change.
Okay.
But again, it's all about a guy who set out on a journey, and along the way, he met a lot of people who believed in his journey and helped him to get there, and those that remain on that journey with him was able to experience those things along the way.
Edmund Newton, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. You're always welcome to come back.
I will, definitely. And if you invite me back, I will be back, definitely.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The WCLK Jazz Calendar is made possible by support from the Sweet Food Lounge. Pianist Christian Sands is playing the Woodruff Arts Center as part of the Atlanta Jazz Festival's Emerging Jazz Icon Series on Saturday, April 7th. At the Atlanta Dogwood Festival on Friday, April 13th at the historic Piedmont Park is Kari Cabral Simmons. On Friday, April 20th at 6 p.m. is vocalist Renee Marie at Georgia State's Rialto Center for the Arts. And finally, Avery Sunshine, Layla Hathaway, Robert Glasper, and more are performing at the 2018 St. Lucia Jazz Festival, May 6th through the 18th. Also, WCLK's Jamal Ahmed will be hosting the Soul of Jazz from the festival. Information on travel packages are available at LT Travel Connections at 770-323-7118. That's today's Jazz Calendar. For these and more live jazz performances, log on to WCLK.com and check out the events calendar. I'm Riva Blue.
I'm Niecy Nash.
I'm Karuchi Tran.
And you are listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Down the street, looks at nothing but his feet. His ass looks straight ahead. He's gotta go, gotta do it. Can't screw this up, or he no surrender day. He sees his fate, he sees the lies, he sees it flash before his eyes. The scissors, truth replaced. They weigh his heart, the feathers lighter.
You just heard new music from Milo and Julian Spisato. The twin brothers who stole the judges' hearts on this new season of American Idol are here to chat about their once-in-a-lifetime experience. The 17-year-old artists are also here to chat about prepping for their new album, which is best described as a fusion of their musical loves, jazz, pop, soul, and rock. Check out our conversation where they talk about that and much more.
Well, welcome to Upfront, guys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah?
How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad to have you guys here in the studio. I'm talking to twin brothers here, Julian and Milo Spisato from American Idol. You guys are making a lot of noise. A lot of folks have been talking about you guys.
Yeah, it's dope. We didn't even expect it to happen. It just kind of did. Yeah.
So I know this is going to be a little hard for my listening audience, but let me try to get some introductions so we can try to differentiate the voices and see who's talking. So let's start to my right.
So I'm Julian. And I'm Milo, so.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how helpful that's going to be. Yeah.
So let's go to that moment, the night that you guys were standing in front of Katy Perry and Lionel Richie and Luke Bryan. What was going through your mind?
It was really crazy because we had been at the American Idol like auditions waiting for like 11 hours, just sitting there. And we were so, like, the anticipation was just killing us by then because it was like we were just ready to jump in there. And just either get in or not, because you're just waiting all day. All these people are in, out, and you just want to, like, see how you're going to do, you know?
Yeah. What about you, Julian?
I mean, being right in front of them was especially surreal for me because I was, like, I've never been one to be really stage fright, but, like, in front of them, I was like, wow, like, these are stars that I've watched for my whole life, and you really start to feel some of that kind of scaredness, but it was more excitement for me at that moment. I just felt very excited.
Now, were you guys fans of the show before?
I watched the show sometimes. I was never, like, a religious watcher, but there was always, like, a couple contestants here and there that I would just, like, fall in love with, and I would just watch all their stuff throughout, like, this show and try to, like, watch their videos and all their stuff. So it was cool because there was a couple dudes who, like, really inspired me, and I really liked their stuff on the show.
What about you, Julian?
I wasn't very interested in, like, all those types of shows. And, I mean, I kind of listened to some of the contestants. And then when I started, like, when we started auditioning and getting into it, I started listening more. And I actually found that I liked a lot of the contestants who were on the show. So, I mean, I kind of found a new love for it. So I'm actually pretty happy about it.
Now, you guys both play instruments and you sing. Yeah. Where did this passion and love for music start?
For me, it started with Stevie Wonder. I was in the car and we were on a road trip, and I remember hearing the song was "Love's in Need of Love Today." And I remember hearing it, and I was like, I don't know what that is, but I know that I want to do exactly that. And from then on, that's what I've been pursuing.
And you, Milo?
You know, music's just, like, always been around the house. Like, my dad's a producer and a writer and a composer, so he's always been playing music around the house, like, and people have always been coming over recording, so you get to hear so much different types of music, so many different styles and all these things, and I was influenced by rock, pop, jazz, soul. So all these things just melted into this whole weird style that me and Juge have in our band, and like that's our thing, like, and so we've embraced that this melting pot of music and are trying to make it work and work as a career and such.
Wow. So I'm talking to the twin brothers of American Idol, Julian and Milo. Now, Julian, you're no longer on the show, but Milo, you're still on the show. So yeah. when you were kind of let go, what was going through your mind?
When I was let go, my initial thing was, oh, that's a bummer. But I wasn't really upset because, okay, of course I was upset. It wasn't the best.
Right.
I was sad. I would have liked to stay. But at the same time, I thought of it, like, take it with a grain of salt. I still got the experience. I still got the exposure. And for me, that's what mattered most. But also, I still get to support my brother, and he's still fighting. And I think he's still fighting for the both of us, honestly. So I don't feel like I'm left out or not a part of it anymore because I still can watch him and support him. So it's not really a big thing to me. I have other things that I'm still working towards.
Yeah. Now, I heard you guys are huge fans of Lee Morgan, who's an amazing jazz artist. And of course, with WCLK being Atlanta's jazz station, let's talk about that. What is it about? What was it about him that you guys really like?
I'm a trumpet player. This is Julian, by the way. I'm a trumpet player. So when I auditioned for the school that I go to, it's an art school, and I auditioned with Lee Morgan's Ciora, and I played his transcription for it, and I learned the transcription. And when I learned that transcription, from then on, I was like, man, this guy is amazing. And then I was just going through all of his albums and sharing it with my dad and sharing it with Milo. And then my dad and Milo started getting into Lee Morgan a lot. And so now we all really like Lee Morgan, and he kind of just like brought us together.
What a pity. You think you own this shit, digging up poles like you got bones to told you gonna call and see. Like a kitty cat with claws, you should get fixed.
So that was some new music from you guys. We're kind of teasing your fans there with Love Your Lies. Let's talk about this. This is going to be all a part of a new project that you guys are working on right now. So let's talk about that song.
Yeah, so Love Your Lies is going to be the first single off of our album. That's going to come out this June. So we're really excited for that because we've been working on our sound and like really trying to get together like something that we know we're ready to like put out. Like we've had other songs, we've had like almost full albums and all this stuff, and then we've thrown a bunch of stuff away because we're like, it wasn't ready yet. It wasn't there yet. And now we finally feel like this is like, it's there, our stuff's ready. And we can't wait for, like, everyone to hear this stuff. We can't wait for them to hear. I mean, you guys just heard Love Your Lies. That's the first time it's played on anything. Yeah. So that's the world premiere, I guess you could say.
Wow. Today is a day of exclusives. So
yeah, for sure.
Got to ask you guys, where do you see yourselves in 5 years? What's the plan?
Well, I mean, ideally or realistically?
You tell me. And this is Julian talking.
I'd probably say in 5 years, I see us being pretty prominent, hopefully. I don't want to sound too confident, but I think our music is something that's really original and something that's really different. And I mean, I feel like we have a genre that hasn't been found yet. And mixing jazz with pop and bringing jazz back and
in a different way
than traditional jazz, even though traditional jazz
so
is
great.
So great, being able to modernize jazz and kind of make it so everyone could grasp jazz and everyone can love jazz as well, because jazz is kind of exclusive to some people as well.
Yeah.
Making it so everyone could love jazz is kind of what I want to do, and make it so everyone loves this kind of new thing that we're trying to build.
And you, Milo?
Yeah, I feel like in 5 years, definitely going to be like touring the world with our band, and you know, hopefully it's our hit album and we're touring the world. That's ideal, you know?
That's ideal, yeah.
You know, like that's the ideal dream, you know, because we've worked so hard on this album, like so many hours of revision, throwing it away. It has to be better. So we put like days and days of work into this. I just wish you guys could hear it and tell me how amazing I am already.
Those were the voices of Julian and Milo Spisato from American Idol. Guys, thank you so much for stopping by up front, and you're more than welcome to come back when the album is totally out, and we can hear some more great music.
Dope. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Alliance Theater, presenting 2 one-act plays by Atlanta playwright and book author Pearl Clegg. These plays follow Jenny Anderson at 2 points in her life as she deals with unresolved questions from her past and understanding for the future. Playing now through April 15th at the Southwest Arts Center. Information is available at alliancetheater.org/Pearl.
Hey, y'all, what's going on? It's your boy Devon Franklin, author of the new book, The Hollywood Commandments, and you're listening to Upfront with your boy Ray Cornelius. Stay right here.
My last guest is award-winning playwright, author, and fellow Atlantan, Pearl Clegg. She stopped by Upfront this week to chat about her 2 one-act plays that are taking place now through April 15th at the Southwest Arts Center. She also opens up about continuing her residency at the Alliance Theater and her plans for 2019.
Well, good morning and welcome to Upfront, Ms. Clegg. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
This is such a pleasure to have you here in the studio. I'm a huge fan of your work, your plays and your books, and I just love to hear you talk.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be at WCLK. Thank you so much.
Very calming and soothing voice. Have people ever told you that?
They have. And it's my daughter always laughs at that. She said, if they only knew.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about some amazing work that you're doing over at the Alliance Theater that's kind of been traveling a little bit this season. 2 one-act plays that are taking place now at the Southwest Arts Center, a hospice, as well as Pointing at the Moon. Let's talk about each one of those shows.
Well, the interesting thing about these are it's 2 one-act plays, but they're both presented in the same evening. It's almost like Act 1 and Act 2.
Okay.
And the plays were written a little more than 30 years apart. Pointing at the Moon is a brand new play. Hospice is a play that I wrote about 30 years ago. And I read it recently, and I'd found that I was really intrigued by one of the characters in that play. And I just kept thinking about her and kept thinking about her. And I wondered what had happened to this character. And of course, they don't exist on the earth. But I allowed myself to try to imagine what she's been doing for the last 30 years. So the second play, Pointing at the Moon, catches up with this same character 30 years later. So that we have a Jenny who's 30 years old in the first one, and then Jenny as herself now 60 years old in the second play. So they kind of let you see one character at 2 important phases of her life.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned 30 years. It's been 35. I was doing my research. You wrote this in 1983.
See, I rounded it off there. Right? I can't believe it's been that long.
What made you want to revisit this? Because a lot has happened with the world. So much has changed. So much has changed with you personally. So why did you want to revisit this work?
Well, I looked at the play, and it really is dealing with something that is timeless. It's looking at the relationship between a mother and a daughter. And this mother and daughter have not seen each other for 20 years. So they have some really serious kinds of communications things that they have to work out. But it's that same dance that mothers and daughters always do, that same yearning that I think so many of us have for our mothers, which is to say, tell me the secret of life. Tell me how to be a grown woman. Tell me what I need to know. And oftentimes our mothers have told us everything they have to tell us. And they are, you know, trying to make us understand that those are lessons that you have to learn yourself. So that when I came back to it, I realized that I had identified much more with the daughter character when I wrote the play because I was still trying to figure out my own relationship with my mother, my own relationship with my dad. And when I went back to it, I realized that I understand the mother so much better because 30 years have gone by. I have a daughter. I have granddaughters. I have grandsons. So that really looking at this character allowed me to see both of them in a much fuller way than I had before. And I thought that it would be interesting to bring her forward and let her look at these modern times after we've met her in the late 80s.
Wow. Now, this show features the amazing Terry Burrell as well as Tinashe Kijasi Bolden.
Who is equally amazing.
What has it been like working with those two ladies?
Oh, I love them so much. I had worked with Tinashe once before. She was a member of the cast of Blues for an Alabama Sky, which was just a wonderful production that Susan Booth directed. It was just a perfect production. production. Yeah. And so I knew I wanted to work with her again. I have never worked with Terry before this play, but I went to see Ethel, which was her one-woman show at the Alliance. And she was just extraordinary. She was just alive and charismatic and just deeply rooted in what that part demanded. And so I told her after the play, I said, well, you know, we have to work together, right? Yeah. And she was actually as excited about that as I was, so that we are, you know, all three of us, I think, are very much aware that this is a collaboration that we all wanted very much. We had the great gift of having a director in Timothy Douglas, who really is a good director for women playwrights and for actresses, because he is not the kind of man who assumes because he's the man he knows everything. So he's very open to what we love about theater, which is that it's collaborative. But he also has a firm vision, which a director has to have. So that we've had just wonderful time in rehearsals. We've been in previews for the last few days and have really had a chance to now invite the audience in and let them take a look at what we're doing. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful exchange.
Yeah. Now, you've had this kind of love affair going on with the Alliance Theater, where they've invited you to come in and do your shows. What is it like working with them? Because they're such an institution here in Atlanta. So what is that relationship
been like? It's been really wonderful. I'm there under a very generous grant from the Mellon Foundation, who funded 14 playwrights at 14 theaters across the country to be in residence. So I'm in residence at the Alliance. And this will be my sixth year of that residency there. And it's just been a really wonderful kind of home for me. I'm a gypsy, as I think, you know, many playwrights are. You know, you go to one place, you do the play, you leave, you go to another place, you do the play. And this has allowed me to really become deeply rooted in one institution. There's wonderful artists working there, wonderful artists coming through there. Our artistic director, Susan Booth, is very much engaged in making this theater really look like and sound like and reflect what Atlanta looks like, which is very important to me. So that we've been able to have very honest discussions about what a major cultural institution in a diverse town is supposed to be. And that's a very real question, because so many of these big institutions in big cities don't look like the city population. They look like a very small percentage of that population. And I'm very proud that at the Alliance, on our staff, on our stage, all the ways that we interact with the community, we're getting more and more richly diverse as Atlanta is. You know, we still tend to sometimes think of black and white as the only way to look at the world. And the world is so much richer than that. There's so many more colors and cultures and feelings than that. So that it's wonderful to let an arts institution be a part of it.
Yeah. Now, you've always featured strong female characters in your books and plays. How does it feel to be living in a time where women of color are now stepping into the forefront? I mean, you have your Ava DuVernays, you have your Viola Davises, and all of these powerful, strong images of black women, which you've kind of been ahead of a curve for a number of years. But how does it feel now to be, you know, in this time period, this renaissance of where the black woman is standing in the forefront?
It feels great. It feels wonderful. These are strong, talented women. I mean, just the ones that you've named, and there's so many more. But I don't think that it's a new phenomenon. I think that they are continuing a journey that I was on, that I was continuing because of the women that came before me. So I think that as African-American women artists, we've been very lucky to have so many sisters who have supported us, so many sisters who have shown us how to do what we do. When I first started writing and touring with books and all that, I was learning how to do it because I had never done any work like that. So I had to kind of look around and say to myself, and I actually used to say this, what would Alice Walker do? And if I was afraid of something or didn't know what I was supposed to do, I would kind of, that was my mantra, what would Alice do? And years later, when I got to know her and we became friends, I told her that I used to say that to myself, what would Alice do? And she just laughed because she said, I was making it up as I went along just like you were. But I think that all of us are feeling the power that we have now, not just as writers or actors, but also as producers, as the people who can determine what story is going to be told. How can we make the budget necessary to really tell these stories? I think Oprah Winfrey has been a big part of that because she puts her money where her mouth is. She wants to work and make it possible for black women to work at every level of the film industry, of the publishing industry. And her power has allowed her to help so many of us do that.
Now, this love affair, as I mentioned earlier, with the Alliance Theater is going to continue into 2019 with the world premiere of, and let me make sure I'm saying this correctly, Angry,
raucous and shamelessly gorgeous.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that.
That's my brand new play. So I'm still on, I'm still at work on it, but it's going to be for our 50th anniversary season, which will be in the newly renovated, beautiful new theater that we've been working on for the last year. But the play itself is about six women who are coming together to talk about finding a candidate, a female candidate, to run for Congress. Mm-hmm. And they have been talking in those kind of generalized platitudes that we sometimes find ourselves talking in about women this and women that and the sisterhood this and the sisterhood that. And when the six of them come together, they have to realize that we are very different as women, that we have different agendas, we have different ideas, we have different definitions for what sisterhood means. And these women have to really kind of deal with what that's going to mean as they move forward.
Wow. So I have to share this with you, and you probably don't know this, but I have a nickname for you. I call you Mother of Pearl.
I'll take it.
And so I was looking that up this morning, and here's what I found when looking up the word Mother of Pearl. It is described as strong, resilient, and iridescent. And so when I looked up iridescent, that is a word that is derived from the Greek word, and I'm saying this correctly, iridos, which means rainbow. And the ira in the iridos is derived from the Greek goddess Iris, which is a personification of the rainbow and acted as a messenger of the gods.
Wow.
And so when I was like, I didn't even know what I was saying when I was calling you Mother
I
Pearl.
I love that.
How accurate is that? You know what I mean?
That's
so
beautiful.
I was like,
thank
wow,
you.
She's strong, she's resilient, and she's a messenger from God. So I just wanted to end this interview with that, letting you
well,
know
Well, I
that,
thank you. That's certainly a charge to send me back out to my day. Thank you so much. It's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that'll do it for today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, Project Runway All-Star Edmund Newton, the Sposato Brothers of American Idol, and playwright Pearl Clegg. I would also like to take this time to thank my upfront engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, April 7th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by the Alliance Theater, presenting two plays by Pearl Clegg, playing now through April 15th at the Southwest Arts Center.